A sense of chaos seems to permeate much of our common life these days. Turmoil churns around the Brexit, with questions of xenophobia and classism rising. We hear the demand for a high wall paid for by our neighbors to the south, at the same time as the cries of refugees echo, still fleeing in unseaworthy rigs and living in tents. There is deadly chaos in the spray of many, many bullets. Again and again and again and again and again. And then more chaos in the fierce debate that follows each shooting, with fear and insults freely flying. Chaos in the waiting for November, in wondering what chaos might be averted and catalyzed by this vote. Bound to this chaos, fear spins further and further out of control. I imagine the disciples were encountering something similar. Their beloved teacher is going to face off with the powers that be. The disciples fear what this confrontation might mean for him and for them. The crowds surge, unsure what to make of this man who can raise the dead, who convicts their hearts as he speaks truth to power. Jesus sets his face toward Jerusalem, and on the way, he and his followers come to Samaria. To the Samaritans, those others seen as a less worthy people, maybe even less than fully human. In the next chapter, the disciples will be schooled by the example of this Samaritan who is a true neighbor. But for now, the Samaritans will not receive Jesus because his face is set toward Jerusalem. The disciples' response is quick. James and John, defensive, probably tired and scared, rise up in disgust. "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" We can imagine the side conversation. "These fools," the disciples may have said, spitting. "They're backwards. They can't even recognize the Holy One walking among us. Let's burn them up. Or maybe keep them apart in the first place." Does this sound at all familiar? It echoes demands we hear for this bigger, longer wall, for a separate empire, for them to be kept out. Out of our country, out of our bathrooms, out of our backyards. Calls that sow fear and hatred. But friends, the progressive side, well represented here in Berkeley and at All Souls, we are implicated too. Even as we work hard to put away the guns, we fight back. We can launch scathing, dismissive, wordy vitriol with the best of them, right? "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" We, too, can be divisive. Our presumption of our rightness and of consensus can be disastrous. I believe in the stands that we take together for justice, and far too often we simultaneously shame or even discard our brothers and sisters who stand on another side. Jesus puts the disciples in their place. They will not be calling down fire on neighbors. Jesus has set his direction clearly. He doesn't get distracted or caught up in the fray or the anxiety. They continue on, weaving their way to Jerusalem. This combination of focused direction and commitment to the way of peace is, is stunning, really. Scholar David Loss sees a revelation of God's nature in this pairing. He explains, in response to Jesus, this one who does not deny or control, who does not wreak down violence or vengeance upon his enemies, who relies on God to the end, in response to all this, God raises Jesus from the dead, showing us that there is another way. This fearful chaos, swirling around us in so many ways, this is not all there is. It is not the only way. We have the choice, indeed, the call, to reach beyond returning hate for hate or responding to one form of violence with another. We are called to follow. With our bodies, our faces set toward Jerusalem, we are called to follow to the cross and beyond it to resurrection. This is our charge, even when we will not be received. Even when the hatred tries to suffocate us, even as the threats pummel us. Do you hear his urgency? The time to follow is now. There is not time to waffle or to tie up loose ends or to look back on the plow or to wait for a better time. It's okay if we're not ready. The call is to follow, to move forward now. I saw such urgent action taken this week as many of our representatives used their bodies to demand a new way, a way to preserve life. I saw them sitting, their suits crumpled and their heels at awkward angles across the carpet, demanding responsible action on gun control now. I watched them use their bodies towards the call they perceive to be life-giving. I listened to their voices swell, proclaiming, and I believe prophesying, that we shall overcome, that we will walk hand in hand, that we shall live in peace. We shall, friends. This is our call. Our faces set toward Jerusalem and beyond to the empty tomb, to new life. We follow. We move forward now. As the chaos mounts and the fear swells around us, as the burden of grief for Orlando and so many others weighs heavy, the tempter is ready, beckoning us to turn again to violence. Violence of words, of stance, of judgment. Violence of rendering others fools or less than or beyond comprehension. Like the disciples, we're tempted to rain down fire on those who just don't get it like we do. But as Jesus sets his face toward Jerusalem, David Loss begs another question. What if Jesus' cross and resurrection are less about forgiveness of sin in some abstract way and more about God's promise to enter into our chaos and fear? To stand with us through all that frightens us. Remind us that God will not abandon us and will bring us to life on the other side. What if this is true? What if our response to fear, as Jesus would have us live, is not violence or weapons or walls or words, but courage and compassion and trust? Where is the chaos calling for you to step forward as an incarnate prophet, acting out compassion? Into what fear will you boldly speak peace? Where will that be? Where do we need to go? I want to close with an image that still takes my breath away, a glimpse of this chaos and peace dancing together. Maybe you remember it too. It was 20 years ago this week that Keisha Thomas, then 18 years old, went to protest a KKK rally near her home in Michigan. She joined hundreds of others in raising their voices against the hatred, telling the Klan that they were not welcome there. But then, in the midst of this wild crowd, one of the KKK supporters, a white man with an SS tattoo and a Confederate flag on his shirt, he found himself on the wrong side of the fence. Suddenly, surrounded by protesters, a group of them began to pursue him and quickly turned violent. They knocked him down to the pavement, kicking him and beating him with their signs. And Keisha, this young black woman, a high school student, she watched. Well aware of the complex and traumatic history that lay between his body and hers, and the hatred that had brought them together that day, she listened as the crowd began to chant, "Kill the Nazi! Kill the Nazi!" And fearing that the crowd really was going to kill this man, Keisha acted. She threw her body down over his, remaining and protecting him until the crowd relented. Her commitment to life called her to preserve this life, the life of the hateful one she had come to protest. She has since spoken of her act as feeling as though two angels picked up her body and laid her down. Her face, I believe, was set toward Jerusalem, toward resurrection. This week, Keisha reflected on that day in Michigan. She spoke of the work that remains for all of us, and she named this call: forward together and not one step back. Forward together and not one step back. Yes. We set our face toward Jerusalem, knowing the pain it carries, but with our eyes locked on the new life that rises beyond it. We come, incarnate people grounded in our bodies, to speak love into the chaos and bring life out of the fear. We shall overcome, hand in hand. We shall live in peace, forward together, and not one step back.